Right now, COVID-19 is on the rise again, and we're facing a new wave of the pandemic. After almost 200,000 COVID-related deaths, there are still around 4 million adults in the UK who remain unvaccinated. I want to know why, and if anything can change their minds.
We've been lied to.
It feels like I don't need it.
Our voices are not being heard.
So, I have invited 7 unvaccinated strangers to share a house.
Are you all right?
Nice to meet you.
To discuss the issues.
Is this an approved drug and completely approved and not under emergency protocol?
Hold on.
And their views.
It is so irrelevant what you're saying right now.
Why can we never get through a discussion?
Together, we'll examine the latest science.
What are the pharmaceutical companies getting out of this, you know?
And meet the experts.
The vaccine could reduce the risk of stillbirths.
Because at the end of it all, I'm going to ask if any of them will get the vaccine.
I'm going to be very honest, I am not convinced.
It's a lot of food for thought there.
I'm Professor Hannah Fry.
I'm a mathematician and I worked on the data and the models that the government used to bring us out of that first lockdown. To find out what the nation thinks today, we have commissioned the largest UK-wide survey since the vaccine rollout.
It suggests that 27% of adults are unlikely to want any more COVID vaccines. A year and a half after the vaccine rollout began, after the biggest immunisation campaign in history, what will it take for the unvaccinated to have their first injection?
We're at a vaccine centre, and I have to ask, will you get vaccinated?
Unvaccinated, gliding over countryside and zooming towards a country house. The participants take in their idyllic surroundings as they walk around the grounds.
Our 7 housemates have very different reasons for not getting the COVID vaccine. Nazarin believes that the thalidomide scandal shows that medicinal drugs can't be trusted.
There are people dying who have been vaccinated and they're dying from this vaccine. The amount of injuries and deaths is not normal.
She works as a waitress and for a local council and spends her free time campaigning.
In all my spare time, I try and use it to do outreach and protest.
I'm just on my way to the march, which is starting in Parliament Square.
A little bit nervous because I'm not really sure what to expect, really.
Chanel from South London has a long-standing mistrust of the medical establishment.
Hiya, how are you? I'm good.
I don't know what the damage it would be, not only to my unborn child, but to me.
There is a whole human grain inside me.
Naomi's biggest concern is her fertility.
Naomi, lovely to meet you both. You still look gorgeous.
While care worker Mark believes in the right to choose.
Really, I just don't like the fact that we're being forced to have it.
Mm. I work in a care home. I've worked for the health service for best part of, 35 years.
Last November, he nearly had to choose between vaccination and compulsory redundancy.
Police have contact with the public, so why weren't they made to have it? You have social workers, shopkeepers, prison officers, teachers. I mean, where do you draw the line?
Luca's sharing of conspiracy theories have got him several bans on social media.
I reckon there is a chip inside the jab, and obviously when they turn all the 5G towers on, which they're building everywhere in the world, I think a lot of people are going to die.
A lot of his views come from Facebook and Twitter.
I've been speaking to people as well on TikTok and online and social media, and they said they've known people to just have the vaccine and just drop dead within like 2-3 weeks after it.
Salesman Ethan doesn't believe everything the government tells him about the pandemic.
You look very smart.
Try to be.
And last to arrive is Vicky, who has a deep-rooted mistrust of the pharmaceutical industry.
We need to stick together as a team.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I'm looking forward to trying to understand actually everybody else's viewpoints because I'm quite strongly opinionated.
I love that. Yes, Nikki.
Yeah, so I don't know.
I know from my own personal experience just how heated these debates can be, but I really want to get to the heart of the issues. So I'll be talking to all of them and questioning Nazarin's views on vaccine-related fatalities and Luca's on 5G deaths. And together, we'll see if we can make sense of the risks and rewards of the vaccine.
Hi.
Hello, everyone. Hi.
Can we hug?
Hi, lovely to meet you. Oh, thank you so much, guys. Yeah, oh, I'm here. Okay.
So, you should know that I've been triple jabbed, and I am in favour of the vaccine, but I'm also in favour of people having a choice. Yeah. And there are people in my family who are not vaccinated. I really want to use this as a chance to understand as much as I possibly can. So we've got 5 days together, and I want to listen to all of your viewpoints. I want to hear all of your stories. And for me, I think science is all about asking questions, about examining the evidence, and really about being willing to change your mind. Are you up for the challenge?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
I'm up for the challenge, but you're not going to change my mind.
Yeah, exactly, I was going to say that.
Sorry. Well, we're starting off well.
I've got a feeling that maybe your viewpoint by the end of this week may be slightly different to what it is now.
Have any of you had a vaccine at all?
No. I guess as a black woman, there's been a lot of medical mistrust when it comes to my community. Mm-hmm. There's been experiments put on black people.
Absolutely.
So I'm like, you know, I'm very cautious.
No, I didn't follow one COVID restriction from start to finish. I'm so proud to say that. I did not lock down. I did nothing that our government said. And when he was having cheese and wine, so was bloody I.
All of these topics. I think that you're all raising genuinely fascinating things, and I think that there is going to be a lot of really interesting debate and hopefully respectful challenges on all sides.
Absolutely.
And I'm really looking forward to hearing more.
38-year-old Chanel's unpacking her suitcases in a guest bedroom.
There is rational fear when it comes to black people and poor medical treatment.
I'm just a normal person that doesn't want to take part in a trial.
I feel that this has been very rushed, so for me, I don't want to be a human guinea pig.
The COVID vaccine has received some extreme responses across the UK. And yet, vaccine hesitancy is nothing new. There have been anti-vax protests since Edward Jenner invented the first smallpox vaccine in 1796. But it's no exaggeration to say that vaccines have revolutionised healthcare, combating deadly diseases like polio, cholera, and tuberculosis. The World Health Organization now lists vaccine hesitancy as one of the top 10 threats to global health. The Vaccine Confidence Project work with them, carrying out pioneering research to better understand its causes. I'm meeting psychologist Clarissa Simas from their team.
My big question is, what did we get so wrong about the way that we've been talking about this that millions of people still don't want to take the vaccine?
I don't think there's an easy answer to that, just putting it out there, because it's such a complex issue. There is no one solution. But if you have a crisis of confidence, it means that people are not going to vaccinate, and that can happen with any vaccine. So it means that even diseases that have been at bay or have been kept under control for decades, they can come back if you don't have enough coverage of vaccine. So that is why it's so important to not take it for granted.
What advice do you have for tackling these conversations?
The first point would be to try to understand where the hesitancy is coming from and to try to figure out what are the root causes behind it. I mean, vaccine hesitancy is such a complex issue because it's supposed to be only about this medical technology when, in fact, it's about so much more.
Yeah. Do you think I'm setting myself up for a fall here by even having seven people in the house?
Honestly, I don't think so. And I think that many times people try to stay away from that conversation, and it is such an important conversation to have, because if you have one person here that comes back with a more open mind about it and ready to have that conversation with their groups and their families and their communities, it means that you can have a sort of positive viral effect in that sense too.
To get an insight into this growing issue, we've commissioned the largest UK-wide survey since the vaccine rollout, including over 2,500 people, of which more than 600 are unvaccinated. We asked them what they were most concerned about when it comes to the vaccine.
So of the unvaccinated people, 50% of them said that they were concerned about blood clots. side effects is a very big issue here. Interestingly, it's not just the serious side effects that were worrying people. So a quarter, 25% of our unvaccinated respondents said that they were concerned about common side effects like headaches or sore arms or redness around the site of the jab. And we actually expect about 1 in 10 people to experience those common side effects. But strangely, a lot of people will experience those kind of common side effects because they expect to.
At a rectangular table.
I want to talk to the group about a fascinating study which revealed that a lot of suspected common side effects are in fact the result of the nocebo effect, where people experience a negative physical side effect because they're expecting to. During vaccine trials, many people reported common side effects even though they hadn't received any medication.
There was one study in America. The overall result of that study was that 76% of common adverse effects from the vaccine were essentially down to the expectation that you would feel rubbish after the vaccine.
Not necessarily. Somebody can't have heart inflammation and that not be correct. So when we're talking
I've just said that I'm not talking about serious side effects.
Okay.
And I promise you...
So somebody may think they've got a headache, but perhaps they have got a headache. Have they got a cold the next day?
I promise you we'll talk about severe side effects
that's
later.
Fine.
I just want to make sure that we compartmentalise stuff so that we
fine.
Can stay on
top of it. Yeah, that's fine. What the other thing is that whether somebody woke up with a headache or not is irrelevant. I'm here to put out the message about people dying.
Okay, then. So then we
and
can.
And being permanently injured.
That's
by
okay
it.
Then. That's okay. Hold on.
Because if they have
that.
Them long-term adverse reactions, they have them.
I promise you, we will talk about all of those serious implications later. And I promise you, I'm going to give you plenty of time to do it.
I still want this experience for us to kind of be happy. And for me, when I look at you guys and when you're speaking, you're not happy.
You guys have maybe not quite as strong opinions and you're not as...
It's not that we don't have strong opinions.
No.
But, you know, I want to get the information, but then I also want to feel
you're very
good.
Trusting
you're
trusting is
open.
The problem.
Open. And you think it's trusting?
No, I'm not trusting. Oh. So instantly, like, the moment Hannah says, oh, I've got this data, I'm just like, where did it come from?
I don't agree.
Should I find some other data from somewhere else?
I think the thing is, for me, over the course of this week, I want to try and find as much common ground with all of you as I possibly can. I'm not trying to trick you. I'm not trying to catch you out. I'm just trying to present what the scientific community sees as the gold standard evidence.
I think there's a fine line between having passion and what you're saying and knowing your research and then just kind of completely dismissing kind of both sides of the story. Considering that we have only just started, it is starting to hot up.
I'm very passionate about the things that I do believe in, and I'm not afraid to tell everyone about it.
Vicky's scepticism for conventional medicine is rooted in decades of personal experience.
I broke my back when I was 21. Unfortunately, the instant thing for everybody to do was to give me painkillers. They sent me a little bit crazy. They certainly didn't help the way that I felt. At no point did anybody think to stop and consider what alternatives there may have been.
Her troubled relationship with pharmaceuticals led Vicky to set up an alternative health business and to question the safety of modern medicines, and in particular, the COVID vaccine.
I've got one life, I've got one body. I don't want to put anything in my body that could be detrimental to me.
And Vicky is not the only one in the group who's deeply sceptical of Big Pharma. She and Nazarin have particular issues with Pfizer, one of the world's biggest pharmaceutical companies and the first to administer the COVID vaccine in the UK.
Pfizer released a document recently. In that document, there are 9 pages of adverse reactions. I would say the most common adverse reactions for the vaccines are heart attacks, strokes, blood clots, seizures. It's just really mind-blowing.
The thing is, when you look at that Pfizer report, it looks terrifying. I totally understand why people are scared.
But there are some important distinctions to make here. The 9 pages on the Pfizer report is not saying that these adverse reactions have been caused by the vaccine. That might seem like a subtle difference. But crucially, an adverse event has no proven link to the medication. It's an event that could just happen to take place afterwards.
There's a doctor who was giving an MMR vaccine to a little boy, and then just as they're about to put the jab in the boy's arm, the phone goes, and it's like a 50-50 call, right? Do you answer the phone or do you do the jab first? The doctor decides to answer the phone, and while they're on the phone, they put the syringe down, while they're on the phone, the little boy, who hasn't been touched by the doctor, starts fitting. Now, had he chosen to do things the other way around, had the doctor decided instead to do the vaccine before answering the phone, then for the rest of that little boy's life, he and the mother and probably the doctor would be completely convinced that it was the jab that did that.
The only way to tell if something is a genuine side effect rather than a chance event is to carefully record and monitor what happens to people who are given the vaccine and work out if a condition is happening more often than you would expect in everyday life. Scientists have done exactly this with the Pfizer vaccine and found that there are indeed some rare side effects, anaphylaxis and a type of heart inflammation called myocarditis that can be caused by the jab. Similarly, we know that blood clots are linked to the AstraZeneca vaccine, while Bell's palsy and Guillain-Barré syndrome have now also been flagged as potential rare side effects. We are seeing around 29 more cases per million of those two conditions than you would otherwise expect. To help the group try and find answers to their individual questions about side effects, I've enlisted the support of GP Dr. Aurora.
There's quite a difference of opinion, actually, between them.
She works with the British Medical Association to promote the vaccine online. And I know that Ethan has got concerns about things he's read on social media.
So at the moment, what's your sort of viewpoint on the vaccine?
It's just, to be fair, there's a lot of fear.
Mm-hmm. Is there a main fear? Is it love, fear?
Well, no, I look at some of the side effects, or at least some of them that you see online.
Yes.
And I'm just starting to think, I don't want that. Mm-hmm.
Was there any in particular that sprung out to you that really worried you?
I mean, I'd like to have kids.
Yeah.
So I want the fella to be working.
Uh-huh. All the research studies that have been done have showed that there's no impact on fertility in male or female patients. Right. However, there has been research studies to show, and clinical evidence to show, that if you have COVID-19 infection, that can temporarily affect sperm quality and count.
To be fair, I was more seeing focused on the side effects from that.
Ethan is not the only one who's worried. Results from our survey suggest that over 20% of people who haven't been vaccinated are concerned about their fertility. For Naomi, COVID has become a much more real threat. She caught the virus in January 2021 and had to be admitted to hospital for 2 days. She's now one of the 2 million people suffering from long COVID in the UK.
I'm still affected with long COVID to this day. I feel quite tired and sometimes just get run down. From having COVID, health and well-being has been something that's been really paramount in my life for the last couple of years. I don't want to put a trial vaccination into my body until I am certain that, you know, it's not going to deplete fertility.
Hey.
How are you today? Nice to meet you.
Dr. Roy, lovely to meet you.
Lovely to meet you too.
So today would be good just to hear from you, sort of what your viewpoints are, how you feel and how I can help.
I have many kind of various reasons at the moment why I'm not vaccinated.
Yes.
However, that could be subject to change in the future. Fertility is an area, you know, as a woman kind of in my early 30s now, I think about more so. I don't have children at the moment. I am interested to find out more before essentially make a decision.
So there's obviously been reports of this irregularity in the menstrual cycle, which we know has happened. So initially it was happening. And whenever symptoms come aboard from the vaccine, they're followed up.
Mm-hmm.
So that was looked into. And the studies found that actually there is irregularities in the menstrual cycle and they're temporary.
Okay.
And they come about normally after the next cycle, you might have a heavier period.
Yeah.
or it might come on 2 to 3 days late. But by the second cycle, so by the second or third period, that's all gone back down to normal again. Okay, and there's no long-standing issues or any effect on fertility.
Ethan and Naomi seem open to Dr. Aurora's advice. But I want to catch up with Nazrin, one of the youngest in the group.
A placard reading Stop COVID Jabs for Children.
I feel it's really important to fight for what I believe in and for what I see to be true. In any situation, if you don't agree with something and if you believe something's wrong, you need to speak up and make noise.
It's just good to get the information out, inform people of what's going on so they can make an informed decision, which is what this is all about. It's about
fighting for people who aren't able to fight for themselves. It's about giving people that information so that they can make a decision based on both narratives, because there are definitely two sides to it.
I know Nazrin has family and friends who she believes have been seriously affected by the vaccine. And it's these experiences that have fueled her activism.
Tell me about some of those stories about injuries from the vaccine.
My friend Katrina, she is 28 years old. She was perfectly healthy before. She only had one dose of the Pfizer vaccine. 5 days later, she was beginning to experience brain fog. Now she's had a stroke. She's had 3 suspected heart attacks.
And she's a very good friend of yours?
Yeah. Well, now she is.
Did you know her before?
No. So this is a video of her having a seizure.
Hmm.
She's on a hospital bed.
Her life has been profoundly changed by what's happened to her.
Yeah.
I think the one question that I would ask is how can you be sure that that was the vaccine and not something that would have happened anyway?
If you've been completely healthy before, that one thing changed, and then days later, you're suddenly experiencing all these things you've never had before, like paralysis and seizures. The chance of that happening to someone so young, I would say, not possible.
It's not zero, though.
You know in your heart that that's what caused it, and it's not just her. There's so many people who are going through the same thing.
I just don't think it's enough to say it's happening a lot without the evidence for it. I'm actually not trying to change your mind, weirdly. I'm not trying to persuade you of anything. That was such an interesting conversation. And she really cares about people. She doesn't want people to take something that could hurt them. I mean, that really is ultimately the heart of it.
We know that the vaccines aren't without risk, but I want to help the group think about the chances of being badly affected and how those numbers compare to what can happen with the disease itself.
As humans, right, we are most affected by stories. But the reason why science and mathematics and statistics, the reason why they exist, is because they are the things that allow us to step outside of our emotional engagement with these topics and to give a sense of objectivity.
To start the conversation on risk, I'm going to focus on what is now the most common serious side effect, myocarditis, an inflammation of the heart. Normally, it will resolve itself, but in serious cases, it can put you at increased risk of a heart attack.
The problem is, when it comes to numbers, if I just tell you what they are, or you just read them, it's quite hard to anchor your mind in what they mean. So, I want everyone to try and visualise what we're actually talking about. So to do that, I've come up with a game that I like to call Jelly Bean Roulette. OK, I've got a little game for us. I have got here 20 jelly beans. 19 of them are absolutely delicious, and one of them is not. OK, why doesn't everyone take a jelly bean? So you've all got one each. OK, all right, everyone's got a jelly bean.
Am I supposed to buy for you?
I'm not.
Yeah, that's that one.
You got unlucky. I'm sorry. You had a 1 in 20 chance.
OK, let's play another round.
Now, this time, the nasty jelly bean represents the risk of getting myocarditis if you have the vaccine.
Round 1 carried a high risk of getting the nasty jelly bean. Round 2 is a much more attractive proposition.
covering the table.
It's quite like jelly beans, right?
Yeah.
So only one jelly bean is myocarditis. All the other jelly beans represent somebody who had the vaccine and did not end up with that side effect, which is, in fact, the most common severe side effect, myocarditis. Mm-hmm. It looks like quite a lot of jelly beans, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Except this is not the correct number of jelly beans. To get the correct number of jelly beans, you actually need 33,000 jelly beans, of which one jelly bean represents a person who gets myocarditis. So we are not saying that myocarditis does not happen from this vaccine, but what we're saying is that in choosing to have the vaccine or not, you are effectively playing a game of jelly bean roulette.
So, yeah, one out of all of these could get myocarditis, but then a lot of these could be other adverse reactions.
Actually, myocarditis is the most common severe side effect. Even if you include things like anaphylaxis, things like Bell's palsy, all of them are numbers that are much greater.
They stare at the Hessian sacks of beans.
I've deliberately chosen myocarditis, which is now the most common serious side effect, and one of the age groups most at risk from it are 18 to 29-year-olds. It's also important to put these numbers into context. While there is around a 1 in 33,000 chance of getting myocarditis in that age group from the vaccine, your chances of getting myocarditis from COVID are higher.
So am I just unlucky that I've heard of so many people experiencing it?
I don't know whether you are unlucky or whether it's something else. For example, the fact that you go to marches, you have a community of people around you where you talk about these issues. And part of that community means that you are more likely to be tapped into stories of people who are unlucky.
Not at all.
You've included one side effect. Like, if you want to have a discussion, an open, honest discussion about adverse reactions and about those numbers, this is not how we should be doing this. It makes me quite angry and quite frustrated when I'm, you know, gunning for thousands of people who have either died or been injured, that I'm going to sit here and entertain jelly beans.
I fully understand your frustration.
I'm so frustrated. This is just, I say, the most frustrating thing I've ever done in my entire life.
It's important to acknowledge that there have been vaccine-related deaths, mostly related to a rare type of blood clot associated with the AstraZeneca vaccine. The numbers of fatal blood clots reported in the UK up to May 2021 were in the tens, not the hundreds. And as soon as the link was spotted, age groups at higher risk of clotting were no longer given the AZ vaccine as standard.
43-year-old Vicky has left the discussion. A new day.
It's day three, and while we've talked a lot about side effects, I want to take a look at the second biggest barrier to vaccination: the perception that the vaccines were rushed onto the market. Our survey indicates that 58% of unvaccinated adults think there was not enough research carried out, and 55% think that they were developed too quickly. I want to address this head-on, and so I'm taking them to meet some of the scientists who've tested and trialled the vaccines. But not everyone is on board.
Vicky doesn't want to come with us to Bristol. Which I understand. She feels frustrated in the same way that I do. One thing I'm a bit disappointed about is that because Naz and Vicky are so entrenched in their beliefs, they're sort of immediately shutting down any type of conversation that they don't agree with. And it means that people are not being given room to ask the questions that they want to ask.
Vicky and Nazarin are staying behind. The rest of us are splitting into two groups. I'm heading to Bristol with Luca, Ethan and Mark to meet Professor Adam Finn, who's been instrumental in COVID-19 vaccine research. It's a chance to get to know Luca, who, out of the group, posts the most extreme views on social media.
Luca, on your Twitter feed...
Did you stalk my Twitter?
Of course! Did you stalk me?
No, I stalked your Instagram.
Oh, there you go.
So, I've posted something about a microchip being in the vaccine. You don't know these days, do you? Because, you know, we've been lied to. No one knows what's actually in that vaccine, do they?
Our survey indicates that 5% of unvaccinated adults also believe that there's a microchip in the vaccine.
I'm banned from Facebook again for 30 days. I think the vaccine was put on this world to depopulate, you know, the world and get the population down. And unfortunately, it's actually killing a lot of people. You can see all these healthy athletes dropping dead every day, you know, with heart attacks, problems, young kids, you know, passing out of school and dying. You know, it's from the jab. I've noticed there's quite a few 5G towers that have been popping up quite a lot. I think once they switch them on, there's going to be more deaths.
Luca lives on his own in Tunbridge Wells.
I feel there's like a divide as well between unvaccinated and vaccinated. I think my next boyfriend, I want him to be unvaccinated, but it ain't going to happen.
A lot of these views of Luca's are misinformation, based on rumour, not fact. I'm hoping that the visit today will lead him to question what he's been sharing.
Do you want to grab a mask, girl?
I'm not wearing it, though.
You don't want to wear it?
No.
I think we might have to, though.
But I'm exempt.
He walks through, unmasked.
Having led clinical trials for Oxford AstraZeneca, Janssen and the newest vaccine, Valneva, Professor Finn is an expert in how vaccines work.
The COVID vaccines we've got at the moment are very good at protecting you from getting seriously ill, but they're not really very good at stopping you from passing the infection on to other people. When you encounter an infection, a foreign microbe or a vaccine, you make an immune response to that particular thing. And one of the really important parts of the immune response are called antibodies. These are proteins that your white blood cells make.
With COVID, antibodies are a key part in helping your body fight off the virus.
So that's what we're going to do today, is going to show you how we measure antibodies in saliva, in spit, from people who've had the vaccine, looking before and after.
OK, should we have a look?
Yeah, absolutely. OK,
Ben, you can begin.
We've got two samples from four different people. One sample before they had the vaccine and one after. The colour change will tell us how they're responding to the virus.
If there's a lot of antibody, you'll see a big colour change. And if there's no antibody, there won't be any colour change at all. And actually, there's already some colour change coming through, because that's how fast antibodies bind.
That's so quick, isn't it?
And what we see consistently with people who get vaccine is that you go from having no antibodies, unless you've already had the infection before, and you go to having a lot of antibodies.
So I wanted to know the risk of for somebody who's had COVID twice compared to that of somebody who's been vaccinated.
Sure. We think that the immunity you get is more consistent and usually stronger if you've had the vaccine than if you've had the infection, unless you got the infection really badly. What we are finding, though, is people who have had vaccine and then get the infection, they get a very strong immune response. The problem is that we don't know what will happen next. If they go on being mild variants coming through, then that's fine. But if we got another more virulent one, then that would be a problem. So the future's a bit uncertain.
I want to hear more from Professor Finn, so we're taking the discussion outside.
What I'd really like to ask is, this vaccine was created and for distribution quite quickly compared to others. And I think there's a bit of a fear there that how was that done? Yeah. So fast and passed through legislation?
Yeah, it's a really important question, and it's a really relevant one, because the speed with which these vaccines were developed is unprecedented. The way it was done was not by missing out steps that we normally do. It was by taking an enormous financial risk that you wouldn't normally take.
One academic that I spoke to said that it was also because of bureaucracy, really, that normally someone wants to schedule a meeting and they're like, oh, I can see you in 3 months. Whereas in this situation, the urgency was so ever-present that people just got rid of anything else that was in their diary, and this was the priority.
What's actually in the vaccine?
The vaccines that we're using in this country at the moment are quite different from the vaccines that we've used in the past. We were able to get the code for this spike protein on the virus within a matter of weeks from China. And that code was enough to make the spike protein.
Put simply, the mRNA vaccine enables your body to make its own copies of the spike protein, which in turn kickstarts the immune system into creating the antibodies you need to fight the virus.
You know, what are the pharmaceutical companies getting out of this? You know, they produce this vaccine, you know, they're making a lot of money.
AstraZeneca went into partnership with the University of Oxford, were persuaded by Oxford to make no profit on the vaccine until the pandemic was over. And so they've essentially been selling their vaccine at a very low cost. The American companies like Moderna and Pfizer have taken a very different approach, and they've seen this as a bonanza. I mean, they've made an absolute fortune out of making these vaccines, but we've all kind of jointly made the decision that capitalism is the way we want to go. People like me and people like the regulatory authorities exist as a kind of buffer in between them and the public. And if results come out that companies might not like the look of, it's my job to publish them and make sure that everyone knows what's going on.
I wonder if meeting Professor Finn face-to-face has had any impact on the group.
Did it clear stuff up for you?
Yeah, it did. Obviously, you know, what's actually in the vaccine and also, you know, the pharmaceutical companies, you know, what they're making out of it.
And did you buy his explanation?
Yeah, I did, but I still wouldn't have the vaccine.
On a minibus.
While we've been in Bristol, Chanel and Naomi are making their way to the St George's Vaccine Institute in London to find out how the COVID vaccine affects pregnancy.
I chose not to get the vaccine prior to the pregnancy, and that was also about fertility.
Yeah.
I'm an older girl having a baby, and so I didn't want anything to infringe on that before we got pregnant.
So for me, that's why I've not chose to be vaccinated as well at the moment. You know, I would love children, and I just don't want to do anything that's going to, like, jeopardise me.
Chanel is worried about the vaccine's safety. Perhaps it's no coincidence that she's from Lambeth in South London, which until recently had one of the lowest vaccination rates in the UK.
As a minority group, we have been always seen as less than. My other half, he's a lot more hardline when it comes to the vaccine. And when we got pregnant, that was a conversation that we both had to have. There are complications, there are vaccine health issues and deaths. So I think I need to do a little bit more research. I need to get more information about it.
Thank you so much for your help today. Thank you.
At the University of London.
Naomi and Chanel are here to meet Professor Khalil and volunteer Valentina to hear about the latest results from one of the largest vaccine and pregnancy trials in the UK.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hiya.
Chanel caught COVID when she was 21 weeks pregnant.
I was absolutely petrified when I caught COVID and was pregnant. And even now, I'm still going to be looking at my babies and milestones and thinking, did that have anything to do with the COVID that I had at the beginning of the year?
It's normal and it's common for pregnant women to feel very protective of their babies. But what we know for sure, the vaccine does not cause miscarriage. We know that the vaccine does not increase the chance of stillbirth. So we really have good safety data from a very large number of pregnant women who actually received the vaccine.
And that's just in the UK?
Not just in the UK. So most of the data that we have are from the United States, mm-hmm. from the UK, from Canada, from Israel.
And they all align with each other? They all basically say
consistent.
The same thing?
There's been no concern so far. What's new that actually is potentially the vaccine is actually useful for you and for the baby. So the most recent data tells us that the vaccine could reduce the risk of stillbirths by about 15% in women who get the vaccine.
That is a number that is worth repeating. If you catch COVID while pregnant, your risk of losing the baby to stillbirth is 15% lower if you've had the vaccine.
Like, I'm going to be very honest, I am not convinced. I really want to get down to the crux as to, like, why you would, like, maybe do a it's a trial, isn't it?
You know, I can understand that you feel really protective. I mean,
I am the same. I'm 32 weeks, so I am the same. You just need to step back and think, OK, that's what I'm feeling about it. So go into or try to see where are the right information.
They're braver than me.
Actually, what we found is that the vaccine giving the pregnant woman prevents hospitalization because of COVID in the infant for the first 6 months of age.
For Chanel, it's never been just about the COVID vaccine. There are some appalling statistics about the healthcare of black women in the UK.
We are four times more likely to die in childbirth because our voices are not being heard. So what do I need to do? Do I need to scream loud? Like, do you understand what I'm saying? So I need to get over that stuff first before I even think about COVID. What I'm being told is just what's good for me, not what has happened in the past and how can we alleviate some of these issues.
Look, I mean, I think it's important to acknowledge what happened in the past. Mm. It's our duty to reach out to you and to your community. Mm. And actually, we'd really love your help in how to actually engage with black women, black pregnant women. Mm-hmm. We want the best for you and for the baby.
It is definitely something to think about in terms of, you know, getting, you know, some other black women together. I'd be happy to work with you and collaborate on that because I think that is so important.
Thank you very much.
Oh, we can hug it out.
Oh, yes, why not?
We can hug it out. We can bump it out.
All the best. Okay.
A lot of information circulating around my head right
now.
Yeah,
a lot of information. But do I need to form something in my community where I can go out there or do some outreach projects myself?
I think you do,
and
to
get
be
that
honest.
And get that sorted out.
So much of the conversation around the vaccine comes down to a question of trust. This has always been central to Chanel's concerns. And she's not alone. Our survey suggests that when it comes to COVID vaccines, 22% of us have very little trust in our government. And a further 19% don't trust them at all. I suspect Vicky and Naz are part of this 19%. And I really want to understand what's at the heart of their concerns. But first, I want to find out why they didn't want to come today.
I chose not to come today because I've listened to researchers and doctors on the side of why you should take the vaccine, and I've listened to medical professionals who are saying that these are the reasons why you should not take this vaccine, so I don't think I would have gained anything new from this experience today.
We felt that we can't actually openly, as adults, have an informed conversation with you about the statistics and the facts that we're talking about. All of the data our government made the decisions on, whether it was that we locked down children, whether it was they were forced to wear masks, whether it was that we were testing them constantly, they made all of those decisions about our lives, our freedom. There's so many things that I could say to you. It's so frustrating.
I get the impression that you are very passionate about everything that's happened over the last 2 years. You want to have the conversation about data and statistics. I want to have that conversation too. So that's why I thought that we could sit down and have this chat.
I think the most impacting and the most interesting for us to talk about right now would be trials. I want to talk about trials.
Yeah.
Is this an approved drug in the same way that when I take a paracetamol?
Yes. Well, no,
it's exactly the same. Completely approved and not under emergency protocol.
Hold on. I can't just chase you around.
No, I'm really sorry.
There are different versions of the vaccine. It's possible for one version to be approved while simultaneously companies and the researchers are running clinical trials for subsequent versions.
Okay.
So those two things are not in conflict with one another.
Okay.
So every time that you get an adaptation to the vaccine, you have to go back through the whole process and demonstrate not just that it works, but that it's safe.
Vicky is right in some ways. The vaccines do indeed go on to phase four trials after approval, but this is normal. Phase four trials are the ongoing surveillance of the drug after rollout.
It looks like the last 2 years has affected both of them very deeply, and they're really, they know people who have really had a really terrible time and they're upset about it. You can't really have a proper rebuttal about that.
Vicky leaves the table. Anna's reading an NHS consent checklist.
I'm really starting to realise that the problem here isn't so much about a lack of information as it is about this ocean of misinformation that is incredibly hard to wade through.
Alongside more subtle forms of misinformation, There have also been some serious online vaccine hoaxes. Researchers have found that just 12 people are responsible for the majority of them. That is a tiny group dedicated to spreading misinformation that grossly misrepresents research.
Just to give you an example, here's something I found on social media. This is, on the surface, it looks like a standard NHS consent form. And this, by the way, was sent around to schools. So you have to imagine parents of small children reading this. I mean, it looks completely legitimate. Sign here and take the vaccine. And when you dig into it, it says that there is a 1 in 29,000 chance of dying from the vaccine. Now, it's my job to look into numbers like this. And I can tell you, as an absolute fact, this is complete nonsense. But the question is, how do you tell, when you see things like this, how do you possibly distinguish fact from fiction?
This letter, believed to be written by people wanting to disrupt the vaccine rollout, was unwittingly sent out by a number of schools, not realising that it was an anti-vax hoax. It's no surprise that people no longer know who to believe. Our survey indicates that in relation to COVID-19, over 30% of the population have very little trust in mainstream news, and that includes the BBC, Channel 4, Sky and ITV.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Hi.
To talk about the growing phenomenon of misinformation, I want them to meet Will Moy. He founded the charity Full Fact 14 years ago. Their aim is to fact-check everyone from politicians to bloggers and the mainstream media.
I know something that came up quite a lot in all of our conversations is about posts being taken down as misinformation. So I thought I would bring Will along to talk to us. So, Will, tell us about Full Fact.
We set up trying to keep politicians and journalists honest. So most of the time, what we're doing is tackling people like Boris Johnson and Keir Starmer, things they might be saying to you, trying to get elected or whatever. So this is one of my favourite ever fact checks. Golf can reduce your risk of early death. So these people had done a study, and they basically looked at golfers, and they worked out that golfers tend to live longer. What they hadn't taken account of was what other exercise people do or how rich people are. Golfers are richer than other people. So they'd missed out two massive factors that determine your risk of early death. And so although there was a sort of credible-looking study behind it, actually the claim just doesn't stack up.
It's a really interesting example of correlation and causation is what the statisticians call it. But essentially, it's not that people who play golf live longer. It's that people who live longer play golf.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
So this is a picture that was circulated online. And this is, you can see, somebody applying fake blood to this guy, right?
Yeah. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Actors, I said they'll pay an actor.
This was circulated online to claim that either the whole war in Ukraine was a whole hoax or at least that some of what was being reported as happening was a hoax. Do you know where that picture's from?
Where?
It's from a TV drama recorded long before the war started.
Wow.
I just want to talk about the Ukraine one just for 1 second, if I can, because I know... Because, Luca, I know you, I told you the other day that I had a look on your Twitter feed.
Oh, yeah, God. How did you get on it? Because it was private.
Where there's a will, there's
it
a way.
It wasn't when I looked. God, I must have undone it and then did it again.
Must
have been a hot guy or something.
But on there are a few videos...
Of, yeah, with the war?
Yeah.
That someone I know that
this is incredibly irrelevant. It is so irrelevant what you're saying right now.
I can tell you the reason.
No. We're not talking about a war. We're not using that to discredit anything this whole group is saying.
I'm not trying to discredit anything.
You're generalising again. We're not doing this. We're not doing this.
I'm not trying to trick you.
We're not talking about a war. We're talking about a vaccine here.
Why can we never get through just a discussion and then you guys can hold some of those conversations and say what you have to say?
OK, you said you looked at my social media and you saw something about the war. This guy actually went there and he said it was like a film scene. Like, they were paying actors to pretend about the war. Like, propaganda.
Most of the videos posted on social media that claim to be from Ukraine are untrustworthy.
The Ukraine photo is shocking, but it's an example of how easily misinformation is spread.
When we have so much misinformation, do you find that you're seeing a lot of misinformation on social media in the UK specifically to the vaccinations?
Yes, a huge amount. there are people who are very deliberately exaggerating the dangers of vaccines. And there are people who are making up these stories, honestly.
When you were just speaking about it just now, you were mainly focusing on one side, whereas we just want you to keep reiterating that it's both sides so that it's an equal conversation we're having.
Let's be careful about equal, right? I mean, there is very good evidence that the vaccines are safe and effective.
But there is also very good evidence that they are also causing harm.
Some, yeah, in some specific cases in particular. One of the most depressing and difficult parts of the pandemic for me has been seeing a small number of medical professionals, doctors, nurses, and legal professionals, lawyers, posting things that are provably not true. So there is a genuinely, I think, hard question about where is this balance between we should all be able to share our own ideas, but some of those things can cause real harm.
Sometimes when you fact-check something, how do we know we're not just controlling someone's freedom of speech?
Like in a world where you believe in free speech, mm-hmm. telling people they're wrong when they're wrong is the response to people being wrong, right?
Of course.
And fact-checking is helping you make up your own mind. I want to live in a world where everybody has the education and the information to make up their own minds.
And that's really nice for me to hear that you have that moral compass, that actually freedom of speech has to still be able to be exercised, but allowing you to check those facts.
I actually learned something from this.
Sorry?
We learned something for you. Just that acknowledgement, I guess, for me that, yeah, it's not just the anti-vaxxers, it is also...
We regularly ask the Prime Minister to correct the record when he gets things wrong.
Thank you so much, yeah.
I mean, and everyone down.
Will's really got the group thinking. He's at last found common ground with Vicky and Nazarin. We all agree on one major point. Information is a phenomenally powerful tool. Where we disagree is on some of the facts themselves and how they should be interpreted.
Daytime in the city.
It's our last day. But before we head home, I want to remind everyone just how critical the vaccines have been in allowing us to go back to normal. It's a last attempt to see if anyone will change their minds.
One thing that we haven't spoken about that much this week is about really the devastating impact that COVID itself had before the vaccine was around. So what I've done, I've come down to Lewisham Hospital. So this is where I had my baby. This is where Chanel's having her baby as well. But it's also the place where they treated the first patient hospitalised with COVID in London. And by now, nearly 200,000 people have died with this disease. And I really want to give everyone the chance to talk to somebody who was at the very front line when it all happened. So we've come here to meet Dr. Patel.
Could you give us a sense of just how hectic things were for you working here in those early days of the pandemic?
We were very busy. As you probably are aware, Lewisham and Greenwich was one of the first trusts in the country to receive the first COVID patient.
When you say that they was coming in, how severe? Was it severe enough where they had to stay, or severe enough where, oh, we'll see you in emergency, go home, don't stay here?
So the numbers I'm talking about are those who were actually admitted into hospital.
Really?
What difference are we seeing in patients in the ICU that are vaccinated compared to those that are still unvaccinated?
Mm. We looked at about 550 patients that were admitted in our trust between the 15th of December and 15th of January 2022, which in effect would mean that most, if not all of them, were due to Omicron variant. And of that, there were unfortunately 21 patients who had to be admitted to intensive care, were the most severe patients due to COVID. Of the 21, I'm afraid, 20 of them were unvaccinated. That's 95%. And
just one person?
Just one person was vaccinated. And of the 21 who were on the unit, I'm afraid, unfortunately, seven of them didn't make it. All of them were unvaccinated, 100%. So that's one figure to just illustrate the point. Hopefully, such would, with each passing strain, the virulence would be less. Mm-hmm. However, we need to err on the side of caution, and we need to try and just make sure that we've got all the defences possible for the next variant.
When I hear stats like that, it's just... it feels like such a slam dunk. It feels like such a persuasive argument in favour of the vaccine. And I don't know if everybody else was seeing it that way.
I did find the numbers in relation to admissions, you know, and how many of them were actually unvaccinated. I guess for me, I found that a little bit alarming. So a lot of food for thought there.
The last 5 days have been intense. I think we all need to go home to reflect. But I want to bring the group back together one more time.
So it's been a little over 2 months since I last saw everyone. Enough time for the group really to settle in with their thoughts and work out how they feel about the vaccine. I've decided to bring everyone today to St George's Hospital, the vaccine centre here, to see if anybody, on reflection, has decided that they would, in fact, like to have the vaccine. We're missing someone, though.
Chanel.
Chanel.
Chanel with a baby.
Look at you!
Plus one!
Oh,
we're incredible!
Well done! Well done!
Hello!
How old is he?
He is a week old.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
that looks so good.
Thanks. How's everybody?
Good.
It's lovely to see the group back together again. And I'm so happy for Chanel. I want to have a proper catch-up with them individually. I know Naomi wanted to think over everything she'd learned, so I want to find out if she feels any differently about the vaccine.
I know that you really struggled with COVID when you caught it in long COVID.
Yeah.
If you could rewind in time and go back to before you caught COVID and have the jab then, would you?
That's a really good question. I think I probably would have been quite open to it.
That's so interesting.
And I have been looking at long COVID and how that coincides with vaccinations.
So we are at a vaccination centre today.
Yeah.
And I have to ask, will you get vaccinated?
Now, no, but I'm not completely closed off in future. You know, I'm not anti-vax. I've had vaccinations in the past. I don't know. This one has really kind of freaked me out.
While Naomi is unconvinced for now, she's open to the idea in the future. But Vicky's always seemed resolute in her opposition to the vaccine.
So we're at a vaccine centre, and I've got to ask, will you get the COVID vaccine?
I'm not even sure if we'd go a billion to one at this stage.
Oh, really?
No, the answer's no, though.
I think when it comes to a vaccine programme, it's not just about information, it's about so much more than that.
Yeah, I agree. There's a bigger picture.
It was unlikely that Vicky was going to change her mind. And something tells me Nazarin is going to be the same.
Will you get the vaccine?
What do you think? No, I'm not going to.
What would it take for you to change your mind?
If you risk young people's lives to protect those of old people, it's not ethical or moral. Especially seeing my friend who is more my age, that terrified me, because it's that can happen to me if I choose to make this decision of getting vaccinated.
Because this is an emotional thing for you.
Of course, and both sides, I guess, have emotional stories.
For Mark, it's not about the vaccine safety.
I'm not worried because it has been well researched and well done. It is safe. The main thing I have is you ask people if they want it, the health is up to them and it's their own bodies.
Mark and I have found plenty of common ground, but I always felt that Luca's views were the most extreme.
What do you think the vaccine's made of?
Spike protein.
That's one change, right? Because coming into it, we were talking about
a chip.
Yeah.
So I learned that in the house.
Yeah. Are you more cautious now about what you share online after talking to Wilma?
Yeah.
In what way?
You don't know if it's the truth or not the truth, if that makes sense. Obviously, when I came out of the house and stuff, I thought, oh, I won't retweet that. We don't know if it's true.
Luca has surprised me. Although he's not getting vaccinated, the shift in his views on online misinformation could have a lasting impact. Ethan was in search of the facts. I'm keen to find out now if he is any closer to getting the vaccine.
Do you want to be vaccinated?
Not right now.
Oh. Go on.
Well, never say never, because There's other vaccines out there that work. I'm not a fan right now. Doesn't mean a few years, maybe.
Do you think that you found some answers?
There were some answers. I'd never been against Big Pharma. If I'm against Big Pharma and then I have paracetamol because I've got an headache, like, you can't pick and choose.
Chanel, on the other hand, came into the house with a real mistrust of the medical establishment. I want to know how she coped with her recent hospital birth.
Having to put all your trust into these medical practitioners, the doctors. I did that without fail, without worry. Even when they was like, do you want the baby to have vitamin K? Yeah. Well, if everybody else is going for it, yeah. And so that's why when it comes to this vaccine, it's not about anti, it was just about hesitancy.
It's not no, never, never.
No.
It's just not right now.
And I think that if it does go for a turn for the worst, and we've had vaccines that have been around for a little while, then I think I'd probably be a little bit stupid not to.
When you were last here,
yes.
I know that they asked you if you would get involved in doing outreach.
Mm-hmm.
Would you consider it?
So since then, I've actually spoken to Dr. Eva. There's not a lot of people from Caribbean heritage taking the vaccine, and nobody wants to talk about these things. But I don't mind having these dialogues, because then we can figure out how to move forward, you know?
Outside the hospital.
My experience has been really positive. I believe that I could be somebody that could maybe help those that not only are nervous, but then are a little bit apprehensive of people that are in the medical field as well.
I think if you tell somebody the negatives and the positives, well, then you give them that informed choice, and they can make their own mind then.
Maybe at this stage of the pandemic, it was always going to be hard to completely change people's minds. I think I've come away from this whole experience with just a real sense of how complex this issue is, but also of how we can do better. Because I think if you want to build trust in vaccine programs, you have to listen to people's fears. You've got to own up to the bad as well as the good. But also, I think you have to help people make sense of the misinformation. Experts are warning that the risk of a new pandemic is higher than ever before. And next time, engaging effectively with the millions of unvaccinated could be even more important.
Details of organisations offering information and support relating to COVID-19 are available on the BBC Actionline website.